It's been more than 20 years since hip-hop burst onto the music scene, but from the start it's been controversial. Raunchy language, violence, and what some see as degrading portrayals of women, all associated with some of the most famous and most popular songs. There have been protests, and recently some of those protests have gotten louder. Not too long ago, rapper Nelly was told by the all-female student body at Spelman College in Atlanta that he wasn't welcome there. His music was too insulting, students said. Now, Essence, a magazine aimed at African American women, has started a year-long campaign called Take Back the Music as a way to retain the spirit of hip-hop but remove some of its more offensive qualities. What's your take on hip-hop music? Should the musicians be forced to clean up their act, or is it up to the listeners to tell the musicians we're not going to take it and simply not buy the music? There's a lot of ways to look at this. We'd like to hear what your point of view is. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. That's 800-989-8255. Or send an email, TOTN at NPR.org. We're joined now by Akiba Solomon, an editor for Essence magazine, to discuss the campaign. And Ms. Solomon, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
But before we get started, actually, I wanted to play a song so we know what we're talking about, and this song is called Move Bitch by Ludacris. Now, this is actually a cleaned up version of the song that is suitable for playing on the radio. And the lyrics go on to talk about basically running over women who are standing in front of the car that Ludacris is in and sort of running over groupies, essentially, so that Ludacris can get where he's going. Or I don't know if I've given that exactly right, but it's a song you're familiar with, Akiba Solomon, right?
It is a song I'm familiar with, but I just wanted to sort of correct the interpretation of the song.
Okay, please
My
do.
interpretation is that actually the use of the word "b" isn't necessarily female specific. I think it does apply to women, but I think it also applies in general to bees can be male or female.
Right.
So,
But
I
if
don't
you're
want to
going to
take it
use
too
that
far
word.
off the issue, but
Well, no, but I think this is an important point to start on, because if you're going to use that word to describe somebody, you're not generally doing it as a compliment, male or
that's true.
female. And
Right.
so it's taken on a negative connotation, and that seems to be where people are objecting. Maybe it's not just a male-female issue, maybe it's a social issue that the language is offensive to people.
Well, I think what we're trying to do at Essence is to talk about the issue of the way black women are being portrayed. And I think that portrayal at a lot of times is hypersexualized, and I think that it doesn't have a lot of balance. So where you see videos where there are hundreds, let me not exaggerate, maybe 50 women to one man, and the man is fully clothed, and the women are scantily clad, and the women are dancing, and they're there mainly as eye candy. And those are the bulk of the videos that you see. I think that's when we need to have a conversation. So it's not so much that we want to censor artists, that we are talking about the moral issue of curse words, or we're talking about, even in some cases, the language. I think what we're trying to zero in on is how black women are being portrayed in a hypersexual light and being portrayed in a large number of videos.
Okay, so how do you foresee this conversation unfolding, and do you really think that by talking about this issue, you're going to get the artist's attention in a way that will make changes that you'd be more comfortable with?
Well, so far, we've gotten hundreds of letters, and we've had almost a million hits on our website, and the Take Back the Music initiative is a major reason why. So I do think that this conversation is it's open. It's been around for years. I think Essence has just reopened the debate, and it's given people a safe space to talk about it. Whether or not we'll get the artist's attention, I think we already have done that as well. I mean, we've talked to artists in our January issue and gotten their take on it, just as we've talked to executives. And, you know, at our Take Back the Music town hall meeting, which is going to take place on February 25th at Spelman College, those kinds of things, I think, those kinds of events are going to catch the artist's attention. And not only the artists, but also some of the record companies, video programmers, radio programmers, and society in general.
Well, but you, as I say, you've talked to the artists, and I read some of the comments, and they weren't all, they wouldn't all encourage me to think that they're going to change their plans because of your campaign.
Well, I think that's the unique thing about our campaign. We want to raise consciousness, and we want to encourage critical thought. So we're not, I don't think the purpose is to shut artists down or to dictate what artists can and can't say. I think that what we want to do is talk to our readers and to raise consciousness among our readers who are huge consumers of the music, and they can make that choice.
Okay, well, let's hear what some of our listeners think about what we're talking about, and let's go to Edgar in San Antonio, Texas. Edgar, welcome to the program.
How are you doing?
Great.
All right.
Wonderful. Well, my take on this is that I work with a lot of artists hand-in-hand with the recording process, and I feel that what they say more or less is just an artistic influence of how they live. It's not so much dictated by the words that they choose. It's just a representation of who they are.
Interesting.
How they grew up.
So what you're saying is that the music, but you know, Edgar, we just were talking about the fact that, you know, I mean, men might dream of growing up in a situation where there was one guy and 50 scantily clad women around them, but that's not the reality.
Well, no, but take Nas, for example. They had a spiel on Nas yesterday, and it was talking about how he grew up and a lot of the poetic influence that he uses in his music not necessarily coincides with how he objectifies women or not, but just in the societal bounds into which he was raised is how he chooses to use his words in his music. I guess it's how it's portrayed.
Akiba Solomon?
Well, I think that what you're saying is valid, but I do think that there is somewhat of an imbalance in the way that women are being portrayed. So this idea that most hip-hop lyrics come from a place of reality, I don't necessarily think holds true so much at this point.
I agree with you on that, but I have to say that that's just part of the music.
Hmm.
I agree.
We can't have reached an impasse this early.
Well, no, I think we're on the same page, but I think that there was a point, and there can be a point again, where there's more balance in the music. You know, people always refer to the golden age of hip-hop around the late 80s, and I know I'm taking it kind of far back, but people always talk about that, where you had a Big Daddy Kane who could coexist with KRS-One, who could coexist with Public Enemy, who could coexist with Two Live Crew. The point is not to shut down certain views. It's to add other views into the pot so we can all coexist.
Okay, Edgar, I want to thank you for that call. We're joined now by Jay Icepick Jackson, a record executive at Rough Riders Records. The label represents artists such as DMX, Eve, and Styles. Let's listen to a song from one of the artists you represent, DMX. This is One More Road to Cross from his 1990 release, And Then There Was X.
This is life.
This is life.
This is what I know.
This is what I know.
So to me,
this is life.
This is life.
One more road to cross. One more risk to take. Gotta live my life like it's one more move to make. One more road to cross.
Now, Mr. Jackson, you represent many of these rap and hip-hop artists. How do you explain the lyrics and images in rap music and their videos? Are they, would you say, sexist, misogynist?
I would say that, like, the views of America today. It's a corporation. It's not like a culture anymore. It's all about dollars and cents. And when you look at the videos, you see what sells, and nothing more, nothing less. But on another note, there are certain videos that were out, like, Why, Jadakiss featuring Anthony Hamilton, where they have a lot of political views, and that song was nominated for a Grammy. It's just where you focus your attention and what gets the most attention.
Mm-hmm.
If you're basing everything from what you see on MTV and BET, you're going to get the stereotypical videos that are put out there, with showing a lot of raunchiness and certain things that you would say is disrespectful to certain to black women or women in general. And those are the videos that the callers are calling in for and that they want to see.
Now,
that's what the people are asking for.
So, but you're not saying that BET and MTV are skewing the picture by only playing the ones that are raunchy and violent. That you're saying those are the ones people want to see.
Those are the ones that they're voting for, and right. Those are the ones that BET and them know that they're going to get their viewers to watch. So they are putting those out there more. Also,
so is there any? I mean, is there anything that's off limits? Is the society just as much as you can get money for, you can put out there?
There has to be a limit within self, mm-hmm. but people are going to go as far as you let it take them, unless it's going to be stopped or diverted and put in a certain perspective.
Yeah.
As long as it's profitable, they're going to keep going with it until it's contested.
Yeah, interesting. Well, contested is one thing, but here's the thing. I mean, you know, like you must know that kids get their hands on this stuff, and you know, kids when the parents are away grab the remote control and turn on the television. Do you worry that, you know, you have a daughter? I understand. Do you worry that she might see this stuff?
Yeah, I worry about it,
mm-hmm.
but it's also understood while you're parenting is that the videos and the music don't run your children. You run your children. Of course there's going to be times when your children are out there in society with their friends or with places that you're not able to supervise them, but it's going to go back to what you're teaching them on a day-to-day basis. It's not like they see a video and it's going to change how they look at certain things. And the parents have to be more responsible on how they parent their children.
Exactly. Well, we're talking about hip-hop music and the images it projects of African-American women, and we're taking your calls. Our number is 800-989-8255. You can send us email at totn@npr.org. I'm Joe Palca. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in Washington. We're talking about hip-hop music. Does it lead to misogyny within the African-American community? With us are Jay Icepick Jackson. He's a senior president at Rough Riders Records, and also Akiba Solomon. She's an editor at Essence Magazine, and Essence has started a new campaign called Take Back the Music. And you're invited to join the discussion. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And I wonder, Akiba Solomon, you've been listening to Jay Icepick Jackson. What do you make of what he's saying?
Well, I do think that it's the responsibility of parents, extended family, adults in children's lives to help them to think critically about what they're seeing. But at the same time, I do think that there is an effect that these images and this kind of language can have on children if it's all that's available for them to hear and for them to consume. And that takes me back to the point of balance. You know, I think that when you hear the majority of what you hear and the majority of what you see in videos depicts women, black women, women who look like you, in a hypersexual light, it can actually distort how you see yourself. I think that it can affect your body image, the way you see your body, and I think that it can affect your view of sexuality. And it's not so much that, again, we need to take away all sexuality in videos. That's definitely not what Essence would like to do. You know, dancing, sexuality, all of these things can be healthy and they're a part of our culture. It's just a matter of that being a major, major part of the culture right now.
Okay. Well, let's hear what our listeners have to say, and let's go to Najia in Columbus, Ohio. Did I say that properly?
Yes, you did.
Welcome to the program. What's your question?
Thank you. Well, I had a comment. I do agree with the writer from Essence that there does need to be balance, The bad thing about it is that, you know, I mean, I think that the gentleman was saying that a lot of people are requesting these things, or a lot of people are requesting these videos, and I don't think that that's so much the truth as much it is as they're putting them on because this is what's generating their business. It's making people money, and if that's what makes people money, this is what they're going to do, no matter who it hurts. And another thing is, you know, I would like to know how they would feel if it was their mom or their sister in that video with a thong on and some pasties.
Okay, well, I wonder if I can turn to J. Ice Pick Jackson and ask, what, you know, when you hear that, what do you think?
Well, I think she has a point as far as when she says that there needs to be balance and that the big conglomerates put it out there because they know it makes money. Let me go back to when she was saying when there was a balance with Public Enemy and Karis One and Luke was a part of it, there was a lot of music out there and the people chose what they wanted to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And there's a lot of music out there that's conscience and it's out there, but people are not gravitating towards it to give it the extra push and the extra money it needs behind it. Like, for example, you have Kanye West, who just came out. He's nominated for 10 Grammys, and his music is conscious music. He has a song, Jesus Walks. He has a song with Twista. But also, in his video, you would still see a woman talking about a superstar of a night. You would see it a certain way.
Yeah.
Now, when you buy his album, you would see that, okay, he's more than just what the video is. So it's certain artists you can see certain things from, and you need to take the extra step and buy the album, and you'll get to see more light on the artist and the different side. But when it comes to a video, there's, like, certain ingredients they have in a video. It's going to be nice cars, the things that people from, I could say, impoverished neighborhoods, the hood, would always like. Like, you have nice cars. You have jewelry. You have beautiful women, and I could say maybe nice houses. Those are certain things that people, they gravitate towards automatically,
yeah.
Something that they usually don't have.
Well, can I?
Yes,
Akiba
Solomon, go ahead.
I do. I think that there are a couple of different issues here. When I made reference to this golden age, I think that the difference back then was that there weren't huge amounts of marketing dollars behind this music. So you did get somewhat of the people's choice. I think now there are a lot of marketing dollars, advertising dollars behind certain artists, and there aren't marketing dollars behind other artists. And I think it's because of what we're all saying, that people, conglomerates, profit from sex. Sex sells. I think that's a truism that we all can agree on. But when you constantly put money behind one thing and you don't put money behind something else, then the thing that you put the money behind, I think, is going to sell. I think that's the idea. So it's not just a matter of, oh, it's the people's choice. I think people buy what they're given. And people buy what's marketed effectively to them.
Right.
You know, Kanye West was marketed effectively, which is why he blew up. You know, but he did have a struggle at first, even getting his album put out. So,
but Mr. Jackson, I mean, if you're, you know, which if you have an easy road to go down with, you know, sexy women and fancy cars versus a harder road, maybe where you have to spend more marketing dollars to sell somebody on another product, which way are you going to go?
Well, if the choice is up to me, I'm going to go with the route that's going to be groundbreaking.
Ah.
Because the music industry is just like Hollywood. Once they get something that works, they stick with it and milk it for everything it's worth. And they're not going to change unless you have something groundbreaking where they see, wow, that makes money too. It
yeah.
may not be in their interest to have positive images in the black communities and make sure that this music is being put out on a note where it's going to be uplifting to people. Right now, I'm dealing with a certain situation where I have a song coming out for an artist named Styles P, who has a song called I'm Black. And when I go into the meetings, it's a decision that has to be made. Are you going to go with I'm Black, or are you going to go with the radio record with Mario Winans, which is more air-friendly and not so controversial? I said, well, you know, this music is not about black or white. This is about just an artist giving his view on where he's coming from and what he's growing up loving and a sense of self. So if that song gets a lot of marketing dollars behind it, you may have an uprise of something that may not be in control, that you may not be able to control. So I think if I had to make the decision, it's going to always be with the positive choices of putting out positive images.
And also finding talent.
Right.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank you for joining us today, Mr. Jackson.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Jay Icepick Jackson is a senior vice president at Rough Riders. He joined us, Rough Rider Records. He joined us from his home in New York City. Let's take another call now, and let's go to David in Cleveland Heights, Ohio. David, welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm 33 years old. I've been listening to hip-hop music since its inception until now. I love it, but, you know, like you guys spoke on before, you have to be able to monitor what comes in and out of your house. I applaud the young lady at the Essence magazine for her effort in, bringing attention to black women. But if you speak to some of these black women, they'll tell you that actually in traditional mainstream entertainment, like high fashion modeling, often their features aren't celebrated. Their thick lips or, their features of the bodies aren't in tune with the model world. So they don't mind sometimes going to a venue where they are celebrated. And I feel like this, you can look at other forms of entertainment, like look at The Sopranos. It was celebrated, but you talk to some people and they say, well, hell yes, that's making Italians look in a negative image with a negative light, but here they are being celebrated. So if you're gonna pick on one, you got to throw it all out. Just don't single one out. Don't tell these folks they can make money and get awards, and then tell these other guys that hey, well, you have to be better, because it's profit driven.
Well, this isn't.
Go ahead, Akiva Solomon. Sorry.
The point of our Take Back the Music campaign isn't to single out any particular artist, any particular person. I think we've chosen hip-hop and hip-hop culture and urban culture, I guess, or whatever you want to call it, but mainly hip-hop culture we've chosen because it's the most influential culture in the world right now. So it's not a matter of singling it out, and it's not a matter of saying that it didn't come from somewhere. We know that this didn't just crop up in a vacuum, that it does magnify things that already exist in American society, but we've chosen this because this is our music. This is our soul and this is our culture, and so we want to speak to our culture and we want to speak to it in a safe space where black women and also black men and then also other folks, but mainly black women and black men, can be a part of this kind of dialogue.
Okay, David, thanks very much for the call.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. We're joined now by Todd Boyd, professor of critical studies at University of Southern California and author of The New HNIC, The Death of Civil Rights and the Reign of Hip-Hop. He says sexism and misogyny has always been around and that hip-hop is being unfairly attacked. Thanks for being on the show, Professor Boyd. So is this campaign misguided by Essence magazine?
I would say it is misguided. I think there's long been a tradition of people criticizing hip-hop for many social ills that existed long before, hip-hop came into existence. There was, of course, the campaign by one C. Dolores Tucker about 10 years ago that actually made it all the way to the halls of Congress, having to do with an attempt to censor hip-hop. Hip-hop's been around since the mid-70s, I would suggest that sexism and misogyny has been around much longer.
Right.
I would also point out in some ways what that previous caller was saying, that if you look at Hollywood, if you look at television, if you look at other forms of popular music, again, you know, they have their own issues. This is not to say that hip-hop, you know, is off the hook or guilt-free in terms of sexism, but it is to say to overly focus on hip-hop in this case really makes it seem as though hip-hop is, you know, really responsible for creating something that is much bigger than hip-hop and certainly much older than hip-hop.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Akiva Solomon, before you go on, I just want to make sure I understand something that Todd Boyd just said. You're not contesting the notion that misogyny and sexism are social ills, and that they are part of hip hop music. You're just saying, why blame hip hop music for a social ill?
Of course. What I'm saying is the social ill of sexism and misogyny. I mean, you know, clearly, if you look at hip hop, you know, if someone were to say that there are aspects of hip-hop that are sexist, that there are aspects of hip-hop that are homophobic, they would be correct. I don't think the entirety of hip-hop is sexist and homophobic, but those elements are certainly there. But they're also there in many, many other forms of popular culture and in society at large, and have been for quite some time. And so to single out hip-hop, you immediately put yourself in league with many of the censors who over the years, Tipper Gore, C. Dolores Tucker, for instance, who have tried to, you know, suppress and censor hip-hop. And every time someone's tried to do that, hip-hop has only gotten bigger. And I would, you know, suggest that in this case, the same thing is bound to happen.
Okay, let's take one of our calls now. Let's hear from Arthur in Charlotte, North Carolina. Arthur, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me. And certainly great to be on with the great cultural critic, Dr. Boyd.
Thank you.
In Los Angeles. But just two quick comments. One, how do we juxtapose certain aspects of hip-hop pimp culture with affirmative action and civil rights? And then secondly, you know, I'm 28 years old. How have we gone from Sister Soulja to Little Kim in less than a decade? The type of images that our children see. And then lastly, for Ms. Solomon, you know, we certainly love Essence and the work Essence has done. But in what context, you know, are we going to grow the community with the examination of these articles?
Well, Akiva Solomon, maybe you'd like to tackle that.
Well, I think the context and the way that we're going to help grow the community, again, is to open up a dialogue about this. I think a dialogue is healthy. You know, this is a conversation that has been occurring on college campuses for years. It's a dialogue that's been occurring in people's households. You know, it's just bringing something above ground and being able to talk about it, being able to think critically about it. And also for Essence and our role, I think what we can do is we can convey information. You know, there's a piece that's going to come out in our March issue that talks about women who are in videos. We talk about what you mentioned, pimp culture, and we also talk about a study that was conducted down at Emory University where apparently girls who watched more music videos were more likely to contract STDs. And that study, you know, from what I've heard, has some things that may not work in terms of the methodology, but again, studies are being done. There is dialogue around this, and we want to give that dialogue the light of day. We want to allow that dialogue to come above ground. But I wanted to speak to something that Dr. Boyd said.
Okay, go ahead. We're going to have to take a break in a minute, so if you keep this response short, we can continue it after the break, but go ahead.
Okay. Just in terms of Essence automatically being in league with C. Dolores Tucker, I think that the difference between what we're doing and what C. Dolores Tucker did and what Tipper Gore did is that there's a great deal more nuance in our campaign. We are not, you know, we are not aiming to, you know, go outside with CDs and break them up as Calvin Butts did, and we're not going to shut down artists, and we're not trying to single out hip-hop. What we're trying to do is raise dialogue, and we're trying to have an internal conversation about hip-hop. This is not coming from a place of hate or even of dislike. It's coming from a place of love and concern. And it's not just concern for our girls. It's concern for all of us.
Okay, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll finish our conversation about how women are portrayed in hip-hop music and videos. I'm Joe Palca. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're talking about hip-hop music and what it says about women. Our guests are Akiba Solomon with Essence Magazine and Todd Boyd, author of The New HNIC, The Death of Civil Rights and the Reign of Hip-Hop. And let's take another call from Lamod in Chicago, Illinois. Welcome to the program.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
I'm pretty good.
Good.
I wanted to make a comment about what Essence is doing and kind of like the whole outlook of the hip-hop arena.
Okay.
First, what Essence is doing, I really do applaud them and their efforts in seeking balance. But also, in the light of the different artists, I just say a lot of these guys and females out there are actually living and singing about a perspective in which they're living, what they see every day. Some of them do come from places where, okay, they're raised and on one aspect of life and come out and live a different aspect of life, and that's the part of life in which they reflect in their music. Sometimes it's not necessarily about the money. It's just what they see.
I see. What about that Todd Boyd? I'm sorry. Do you think that's where, I mean, you were saying that misogyny and violence are part of the culture, and so if people are representing that in the music, so be it.
I mean, I think that, you know, I'm someone who's always believed that there needs to be a broad representation of culture as opposed to a narrow one. I mean, if all we had were videos and rap songs that were sexist and misogynist, then, you know, there might be more room for argument. But I think that hip-hop is very broad and very diverse. I think oftentimes what people do is sort of settle for what they see on television, you know, in terms of videos or what they hear on the radio. But, you know, as someone who has, you know, listened to music, studied music, written about music, who lives through music, you know, all my life, I have always sought out, you know, the music I wanted to hear. I didn't just settle for what, you know, I was given. And in that way, I was able to find what worked for me, and those things that didn't work, I didn't try to censor them or discard them. I just didn't listen to them, and I think most listeners work that way. I think the issue is, you know, again, when you look at hip-hop, you have to look at, you know, all of it, and not just one part of it, because when you focus in on this one part, I think even though your intentions may not be to be like a Dolores Tucker or a Tipper Gore, it comes across the same way because, you know, there's a history there. I think people need to get off of this positive, negative image train that they've been on for so long, because it's not going anywhere. I mean, culture should be broad and diverse and nuanced, you know, and it shouldn't be one thing. You know, I always say everybody was talking about the need for positive black images in the 1980s, and the Cosby Show was the highest-rated television show in America. And the problem, you know, was not solved then. That was only one representation. And the same is true now. There's no one version of, you know, African Americans. There's no one version of hip-hop. The broader, the better. And I think one thing that hip-hop has always been really strong on is realism and authenticity. And to suggest, to represent that sexism and misogyny are part of that is simply being real. If somebody wants to come in and pass moral judgments on that or whatever, that's another thing. But, you know, I look at it as a situation where there's, you know, a great deal of images to choose from. Some of those images are problematic. Others are less so. But I'm interested in having a variety and a choice and not interested in narrowing in on one thing.
Okay. We're almost out of time for this segment. So, Akiba Solomon, you get the last word.
Well, I think that we're pretty much on the same page, but I don't quite understand the idea that most listeners are active consumers and will go out and, you know, as folks say, dig in the crates to find the images that they want to see. I think that there are a core group of listeners who do that, but hip-hop is much, much, much larger than that core group of people. And in terms of censorship, again, this is, you know, I don't think anyone wants to censor hip-hop, and I don't think anyone wants to distort reality. I think what we want to do is broaden reality because there are so many different representations, and to give other representations as much play as, you know, the majority of the ones that we're seeing in which has occurred since hip-hop has become mainstream and become global.
Okay, Akiba Solomon, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Akiba Solomon is an editor at Essence Magazine and a member of the Committee to Take Back the Music. She joined us from her office in New York. We're also talking with professor and author Todd Boyd. He joined us from his office in Los Angeles. Thanks to both of you.